You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Right now, you can lease a 2017 Blue Cruise from only $138 bi-weekly at Lakewood Chev.
Pleased to be joined by ace analyst on TSN and friend of the show, Mr. Craig Button. Craig, thanks for joining us today. How you doing, my friend?
I am good, Mark. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for taking some time to join myself and Jason Strader. Craig, what, in your opinion, has been the biggest storyline so far through the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final?
Pecorini being subpar in the net.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he hasn't looked great, but you know what? I will slightly disagree with you, Craig. I don't think he's been fantastic, but I look at that 3-minute or that 4-minute block there in the start of the third period, and I saw an impatient team, Nashville, an impatient team. They were taking risks for no reason. I'll throw Roman Josi in there, the pinch right off the draw. I'll throw Austin Watson in there as well for pinching on a pinch on the on this left side, and then I'll even go on the other side where you've got Colton Sisson making a bad decision. I mean, they're not exactly helping out their goaltender. Am I giving it too easy to young Pekka-Renny, or am I being too hard on the players?
No, I mean, Jason, you know as well as anybody that it's easy to boil it down. See, Mark Mageau, he asked me one thing, so I can only pick one. If he would have asked me a couple, I would have probably added what you just said.
Yeah, I took the words right out of your mouth.
I'm blaming the guy who asked the question. He boxed me in. All kidding aside. You know, unless Pecorini's given up shots from center ice and whatnot, you can't just blame the goaltender. But certainly, I thought there was something else too, Jason, but I'll get to that in a minute. I do think that those were, you know, decisions that were not very good. I mean, Austin Watson had the puck and he puts it into the back there, and then he pinches. And Colton Sissons, I mean, you know you're out there against Malkin, just back off, right? So I agree with you there. And you know what, like, you know, a lot of going into the series, there was a lot of Pekka-Rinne's going to have to be great. My concern with Pekka-Rinne and in the first two games was he didn't need to be great. He just needed to be good. And, you know, the squeaky goal on Gensel,
sure.
You know, I know 37 minutes without a shot, you got to stay focused. But, you know, those are the types of plays. And the other thing I would add to it is they had some real strong play in the first two periods where they took some penalties too that allowed Pittsburgh to kind of be let off the hook. And Jason, you know this too. When you're applying pressure and now you take some of the penalties, the Mike Fisher penalty, you know, the interference types of penalties, that you not only do you have to go and kill a penalty, but it takes a few minutes to mount up the charge. So I think that the Nashville Predators have lost opportunities to keep that pressure on by taking some very ill-advised penalties.
We're joined by Craig Button from TSN. Craig, looking at, I guess, the first two games as well as the playoffs as a whole, looking at the referees, Craig, have they been good, have they been bad, or have they been average?
Here's what I would say. I mean, there's so much focus on the referees, and here's what I say. The referees call what they're instructed to call. You know, they don't just wake up in the morning and go, well, geez, you know what? We're going to call it this way tonight, or we're going to call it that way tonight. And I say this all the time. If you want to register a complaint, just go to your local GM. The GMs are the ones that dictate how the game is going to be called, and the referees just follow suit. So, you know what? I think that the referees are terrific. Do they miss calls now and again? Yeah, they miss calls now and again, just like anybody else. But I think they get it right 98.5% of the time. And the way the game gets called is not up to them. They're instructed how to call it, and they do what they're asked to do, and that's the way it is.
When you're taking a look at the other side, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, the line between winning and losing is so close. It does Pittsburgh. I thought they made some pretty good adjustments going into the second game, but do they have to continue to modify their game, or can they go in there and you know, I think one of the players said, we have to play the most boring game in history.
You mean like the Ottawa Senators?
Oh, that's good hockey. You don't like watching 1-3-1, eh, Craig?
Well, Chris Pronger doesn't either. So, just all kidding aside, guys, that to me is the best response ever. When Pronger just said, "You want to play that way? Good. Here's what I'm going to do." Like, I mean, anyway, you know, when you talk about like, and again, Jason, you know this. You were part of successful teams in junior and successful teams in National Hockey League. you don't teach patience. You learn patience. And you talked about the Nashville Predators being impatient. And I think conversely, the Pittsburgh Penguins are patient. You know, they're going, okay, you know, we got Matt Murray back here. Let's just make sure we don't give up a second shot. We don't give up multiple shots. You know, he'll clean it up. We just make sure we're in position and clean it up and make sure we box out. But then they're ready to take advantage. Gensel coming off the bench in game one. Crosby coming off the bench in the second overtime against Ottawa. You know, Brian Rust being ready to take advantage, you know, off the opening faceoff in the third period. And that's something you learn. And the coaches can tell you, you know, you got to be patient, and they try to teach it, but you got to learn it. And I think that the Pittsburgh Penguins, this is to me where experience really helps them. Okay, it's 1-1. That's okay. It doesn't matter how many shots. We don't care about the shot clock. We care that we're in a 1-1 game, and we got to be ready for the next opportunity. And I think that that's a big thing. Obviously, Mike Sullivan is going to make adjustments, and I think that, you know, the easy thing for a coach to say, we're just going to play boring. The players say, we're just going to play boring. But it's a lot more than that. You can't just sit back and play on your heels, or you're going to have the game taken to you. So, you know, they're going to make whatever other adjustments they feel are necessary going into game three, whether they're big, whether they're small, or somewhere in between. But that's what good coaches do. But I'm really impressed with the Penguins' patience.
Craig, in the last hour, we were chatting with Ryan Rashog from TSN about the Penguins' blue line and how impressive they've been, especially with the injury to Chris Letang suffered earlier. How impressive have you been by the defenseman of the Penguins? And no one really plays over 20 minutes, and there doesn't seem to be a weak link on that blue line.
Well, you know, you know what? Like, I think this comes to coaching now. And you know, I remember back in 04, the Calgary Flames went to the Stanley Cup final. They had injury after injury after injury on the blue line. And Daryl Sutter, just next guy in there, let's get in there. And I think Mike Sullivan does the same. He doesn't ask those players to do more than they're capable of, but you better not give less. And he's going to put you in a position where, you know, the whole is going to make up for some of the individual deficiencies. So, you know what, we're going to be real competitive in front of our net. We're going to be really good position in front of our net. We're going to be hard on players that are trying to play inside the dots. You know, we're going to make sure that the puck is on our stick for long periods of time. We're not going to try to make perfect passes. Because all in all, those are areas that you're asking players now to play outside their capabilities. So I think that Mike Sullivan, Rick Tocchet, Jacques Martin have done a fabulous job with that blue line in terms of getting them to play to their abilities, but more importantly, allowing them to be contributors in a way where they don't feel overwhelmed or where they feel they're not stretched. And I think that's another big key in coaching.
All right, speaking about coaching, you know, there's a report today suggesting that Barry Trotz, the leader, the coach of the Washington Capitals, will be going to his last year without a contract extension. You know, you're a formal GM. You're around these guys, talking about all the time. Is this a real issue for a veteran coach like Barry Trotz this year?
How many years did you go into the last year of the contract, Jason?
Basically 10.
Okay. Right. 10, right? Right. Okay.
And I'm not blaming you. You know, I'm not blaming you. You had the opportunity to sign me to a 3-year deal. You didn't. And, you know, no hard feelings. Let's just let it go.
Well, I will. At the end of the day, you know, so did you change anything you did when you went into last year's contract?
No, if anything, I was maybe a little more motivated.
Yeah, well, and I know this, and for all the listeners out there, I mean, motivation was never a problem for you. You were always a highly motivated, highly competitive player. So I think at times, you know, this idea about lame duck, I don't pay a lot of attention to it. I don't put a lot of weight into it. You know, Barry Trotz is a veteran coach, and I think that Brian McClellan wants to see some things different. Just like a player going into the last year of his contract, you say, hey, listen, you know what? We're not averse to extending your contract, but we want to see some more of this. We want to see you expand your game a little bit or pay a little bit more attention to this. I think it's the same thing with the coach. And I think when you get to this point, you know, with a veteran coach like Barry Trotz, that's when you can say, hey, listen, we're going to wait and see. And I don't think it'll phase Barry Trotz one bit. I think there'll be questions about it. And people, if the team struggles, will say, wow, you know, this isn't good. The coach is in the last year. He's lame duck. You're only lame duck if you let yourself be a lame duck. And I don't think that Barry Trotz will allow that to happen.
Craig, in do you think that coaching is the problem for the Washington Capitals?
No, I don't. I really don't think it is. I think that Washington, last year in the Stanley Cup playoffs against Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh really unleashed their speed and quickness. And I thought that overwhelmed the Penguins, or the Caps, excuse me. I thought by adding Shattenkirk that it balanced out their blue line a little bit. They certainly got Orlov and Schmidt into more situations on their blue line and carried more minutes. But when I watched them against Toronto in the first round, I looked and I went, uh-oh, this might be the same thing rearing its ugly head. But then when I watched games 5 and 6 against the Pittsburgh Penguins, I would have bet the house on the Capitals in game 7. So, I think they made some adjustments when they were down 3-1. They got back to 3-3. They weren't very good. They were good for 12, 13, 14 minutes, I thought. Really good in game 7, but they weren't able to build on it. So when you lose, I think you have to look at a lot of different areas, Mark. I don't think you just look at coaching. You look, okay, where could we use players a little bit differently? What type of player could help us in this situation a little bit better? And I think those are evaluations that from management, from players, and from coaches that have to take place. Let's not forget that they've been back-to-back President's Trophy winners, and that's pretty impressive. Ultimately, they haven't been able to get it done here in the playoffs, but I think that a good organization is going to look at everything and say, okay, Barry needs to be better here. Brian McClellan needs to be better here. Certain players need to be better there. And then you try to come back and build upon those things.
One last for me here. Is it different, though, because you just mentioned the success that Barry's had, both with the Predators and the Washington Capitals? I mean, if Jared Bednar, the coach of the Avalanche, should go into his last year of his contract without an extension, is it a different situation for him because he doesn't have that pedigree that's built up over 20 years of NHL head coaching experience?
You mean for Jared?
Yeah, for Jared. If I'm Jared Bednar, I'm like, oh man, I need this extension because there's no guarantee there's another landing spot. But I'm guessing Barry Trotz would have another job within minutes of being let go or not re-signed by the Caps.
I totally agree with you. And very highly regarded because of his record and because of his longevity in the game. And Jared ended up, let's realize how Jared ended up there.
Sure.
I mean, Patrick Roy resigns in August. They're trying to find a coach. And I'll be straightforward here. I think Jared Bednar, did things the right way as a coach. Went and really, really, really learned how to coach, had success in the East Coast League, moved up to the American League, had success there. I think he's a good young coach. Unfortunately for Jared, he ended up in an awful situation, and God himself couldn't have done better in Denver last year with the Colorado Avalanche. That's my view of it, right? So I agree that a coach, like especially a good young promising coach like Jared, in my view, deserves to have a little bit of security so that he doesn't feel that extra pinch, that extra pressure that you can feel when you're not as established as a Barry Trotz. So I do agree with you there, Jason.
Craig, thanks for this, man. Appreciate it. Jason's back next week, and we'll chat potentially about a Stanley Cup champion. We'll be previewing the games over the weekend. Thanks, and enjoy Game 3 tomorrow night.